Thank you so much. My name's Sabir. I'm an overeater from London, United Kingdom. Lovely to be here at UXT, and big welcome to everyone, and especially to the newcomers. A few things that might be helpful before I get started. One is I've heard sometimes it's helpful when listening to a share just to look for similarities rather than differences, and sometimes it's a nice thing to do to just take what you want and leave the rest. So with whatever I say, if there's anything useful, take it on board, and if there's anything that's not useful, just forget it. And to the newcomers, please do the most important thing is keep coming back. There'll definitely be people you identify and connect with. So this is just my story, my personal experience, which I'm going to share. Right from childhood, I always felt like I didn't fit into this world. There was like something wrong with me. I didn't feel I could properly connect. And right from an early age, I found food to be a comfort. I didn't feel I connected, and I used to eat. I come from my parents are both Muslims, and I think the great thing with that is that no alcohol is allowed. So food was the great comforter for me, and that carried on. And I, as a child, I wanted to be left alone. I wanted to eat. I just liked to isolate, essentially. I did love fantasy, so I loved reading fantasy books and playing with toys, and eating. My mother and my mother. I'm an only child. My mother loved me dearly. And would, just whatever food I wanted would give it to me. And I remember I got to the age of primary school, which is about, 10 years old or whatever. We had a medical checkup, and I was the only person in class. I was so obese that I was referred to, I call it a fat clinic, where my mother would have to take me once a month, have the tape measures out. They'd pinch how many inches of fat I had. As I became older, my mother would, she'd be very distraught with me because she would just say to me, all I'd do was eat. I had these feelings of self-hatred and self-loathing, and she would call me selfish. I was, I don't clean my room. I just eat, and I just feel sorry for myself. So cut forward. Oh yes, the teens. The teens was just a monologue or a sort of a one after the other diets. This diet followed by that. I mean, I'm sort of in my 50s, so it was. I think maybe I shouldn't say all the diet. Anyway, those diets. Diets for just eating. Vegan diets. Salad diets. All kinds of bizarre things. Everything done to extreme. Exercising. And none of them worked. And it's like, and I sort of see it now in recovery that I had a God-shaped hole, and there is nothing, no diet would ever work. I'd have hope that the next diet would. The illusion was that one day I'd be thin and I'd be happy forever. I'd get the love and validation. I'd get that empty hole filled up if I could be thin. Anyway, that carried on, and the self-hatred carried on, and I got later on. I was studying biochemistry at university, and my friend there said, "Look, let's get into the stock market. That's where all the money is, and success, and the glamour." So I said, "Okay, well, let's do that." And I remember, I was just continuing to eat and have this self-hatred and have this self-loathing, and not able to manage my weight. And I thought, well, maybe I can't get thin, but a job in the stock market would fix me. And I finally got a job offer. I did an MBA in finance, and then I got a job offer for a firm in London. And the first day, the director of the company came up and said, "You've got to write buy recommendations in the stocks." And I realized he was asking me to be dishonest. And I had just ta I'd taken out an MBA loan for about, I think, £18,000. I needed to pay it back. So I said, so I agreed to be dishonest. And I was able to be dishonest because I had a coping mechanism. I could deal with dishonesty in my life by, I can see the light flashing 5 minutes. Thank you. Thank you so much. I could see that, but I had a way of just being living with immorality, basically dishonesty around food, the way I was living my life, just living in self-pity and self-hatred and self-loathing. Oh, poor me, poor me, poor me. And oh, and I was full of fear, crippling fear, and I needed my job, and I'll be dishonest for the company. And so I was. But then there was food. I could always blot out the guilt with making not correct spiritual decisions by just eating and just numbing out my consciousness. So I could become like a, basically not the person that I was supposed to be in this world. Anyway, I carried on eating. The binging became even more extreme. The stock market, I just found, I think, because I was so unconscious with my eating that I had gravitated to an ego career, which is full of addicts. And I learned other addictions. I learned sex and love addiction, the stock market. I learned workaholism. I was coughing up blood in the toilets. I was, people would say, you're hacking out your guts in the toilets. It'd be like absolutely. And I remember we had a, I was the senior analyst there, and the director said, look, there's a prestigious trip to New York, the World Trade Tower, and Las Vegas to analyze some companies. He said, but you look very ill. Maybe you want to put one of your juniors. I said, no, I'll go. And I flew off to America, and World Trade Tower, and then Las Vegas, did the things. On the way back, my feet on the airplane were swelled up like balloons, and I had to take my shoes off. When I came back to London, my mother was horrified. I had a blood test done. I was immediately admitted to the Royal Free Hospital with kidney failure. I was 30 years old, and I was dying of kidney failure. I was in the hospital. I had a degree in biochemistry. I realized, I was literally, the doctors were running around panicking, taking about 10 tubes of blood at a time, because I had lost 70%. I'd lost probably about 70% of my kidney function in 24 hours. I was hurtling towards death very rapidly. And I realized it, if these do death was imminent. And it was like my, it's true what they say, your life flashes before your eyes. It was like I was having a moral and spiritual inventory of what I had done with my life. A life of self-hatred, self-loathing, thinking of myself. My parents had loved me, but I hadn't given them any love in return. I'd just been thinking of myself and killing myself with food. I'd been dishonest in the stock market, and I was going to die. And that was the moral inventory that was coming. And I had been a, I'd been an atheist my whole life, and I hadn't been interested in God. I hadn't been interested in a relationship with my creator. But now it came to me. I would turn to God for help. I was going to die now, and I would turn to God. I had never looked to God before. And I had a near-death white light spiritual experience. And it's indescribable, the love of the Creator, infinite love and light that silences all thoughts to stillness. This is very, for me, very important, because for me, addiction was looking for love in externals, in food, people, places, and situations, and in my own ego thinking. But as the thoughts went into silence, this overwhelming love of my creator, the love of God, it was sublime, a love beyond this world. That love I cannot get from food, from people telling me they like me, or from anything external. And it was a spiritual awakening, a spiritual experience. I'd had a spiritual experience, and it changed my whole life. I became God-centered from that day. And I can't describe it, the life of an atheist, and not being interested in God, and then having miracles and synchronicities and guidance and all kinds of good fortune and meeting the right people and being led to the right groups and the right mentors. It's just indescribable, as opened my heart to God, and I wanted God in my heart. And and that all these things happened. They never happened to me for the first 30 years of my life. It was incredible. And I also had a spiritual message after that spiritual experience to find a spiritual solution. I started going to all these spiritual groups. In one of them, I had a mentor who gave me a DVD. I watched the DVD, and as the DVD, I was watching it, I had my second spiritual experience. It was like tingling up my spine in bliss as the man on the DVD started to speak. I knew it was like God was again giving me the next major, thank you, major experience. So the man, I won't mention his name, but I flew out to America, to Sedona, Arizona, to meet the man who's talking. And I later found out that man, who I kind of think of as my grand sponsor, isn't, he's not, he didn't take me through the steps, but he was Bill Wilson's sponsee. He was one of the sponsees of Bill Wilson, who was one of the founders of the 12 steps. These miracles and synchronicities after my near-death, they're not accidents. It's not, you know, that was the love of God, you know, that I got to meet one of Bill's sponsees, Bill W's sponsees. And what I learned from him, and, you know, just to be in the room with him, it was like being in the presence of one of God's instruments. You know, my thoughts would go into silence. I'd feel the love of my creator just to be near him. He had an awesome God connection. And I knew everything he said. You know, I would follow it. You know, I knew he was speaking for God. And he did talk about the 12 steps. He talked about AA, but anyway, I won't go through that, but I was eventually directed to OA, and I got my sponsor in OA in London. But I got to meet him a few times, this man, in and I got to and what I learned from him, I've applied, and I'm 15 years abstinent, most of that in neutrality around food and body. And I just want to share this, you know, for the still suffering overeater. You know, I'm a walking miracle from literal suicidal binge eating, kidney failure at the age of 30, doctors to fighting to keep me alive. And I'm here 15 years abstinent, most of that in neutrality around food and body. That is not my ego. That is not self-will. That is the love of God. That is God doing for me what I cannot do for myself. As an atheist, I had blocked off that the most important relationship I could ever have that could stop me from death and hell. Literally, I've been to death and hell. Kidney failure, three suicidal addictions. It was horrible. I'm not there today. You know, I've been catapulted into the fourth dimension of existence, you know, to walk hand in hand with my creator, to be able to carry a message to the still suffering overeater that there is hope, even for the hopeless. And okay, so I wanted to share now, for me, what is the meaning? I love the Big Book. I'm a Big Book fan. You know, it's the root of my illness. For me, is selfishness and self-centeredness, which for me really is thinking of myself all the time, which is narcissism. I can only think of myself. Me, 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 me. I'm just constantly thinking of me. And that was the problem. You know, it's self-pity, self-hatred, self-loathing. And then and for me, that constant being in my head, thinking of myself, means I get cut off from the love of God. It's obvious to me. And then I listen to my ego. And my ego always never tells me to look to surrender to God. It tells me to look to something outside of me to fill the empty hole. Sabir, just eat more food and you'll feel better. Sabir, just get thinner and you'll feel better. Sabir, see if you can get validation from that person, you feel better. Sabir, just get more money and success. But you know, even if I get those things, that it's never enough. It's never enough, and it's never enough. And eventually, it's like drugs. They stop working. The food stops working. I carry on eating, and there's no drug effect. You know, the other addictions stop working. And then it's like literally hell. And then for me, it was literally the brink of death. But, you know, but that was the miracle. The miracle was, I mean, I share this because I was unwilling to surrender to God until I got to absolute agony in my rock bottom. And I think for me, the fellowships is you don't have to go right down. I mean, for me, I see addiction as a progressive illness. It might take a long time with overeating, but eventually, you know, I really went to suicidal binge eating, darkness, spirit, you know, being dishonest with around everyone. losing all my morals, and then being, facing death with organ failure. So, and that was the point I was willing to turn to God, my creator. Now I was willing to be humble and not arrogant towards my creator. And now I wanted that relationship. And oh my goodness, for me, I've worked through the steps and I've had the near death, and it's obvious. I get a daily reprieve from,
15 minutes.
thank you so much. Thank you for that time. I get a daily reprieve based on how good is my connection to God on a daily basis. To what extent am I living by spiritual, God's principles, spiritual principles? To what step, to the extent I do that, to the extent I feel that empty hole being filled by God's love. It's like when I pray, when I meditate, I feel the pre like love, the love of my creator. And that is the defense I get from wanting to overeat or be, the more I pray, the more I meditate, the more I carry the message, the more my thoughts go into silence and I feel the love of God. And I don't want to destroy myself on any addiction. It's really, really clear. So if I spend my whole day praying, meditating, doing step 10s and carrying the message to other suffering addicts, it's impossible. It's impossible to overeat. It's imp and actually, if I do it strongly enough, I actually get neutrality around food and body. And I start to get other promises as well, like miracles, synchronicities, all kinds of things. I wanted to share this because, one of the things I learned from Bill W. Swansea was it's like I've got a spiritual bank account with God. I had 30 years of being selfish, just thinking of me all the time. So it's like, what's the opposite? How do I get a good spirit? Well, it's service, of course. And when I came into OA, I had I was on a dial I eventually was on a dialysis machine 8 hours a day to keep me alive. But I said, God, I'm going to work for you. I could see that to be of maximum service means to sponsor, to help other people get that connection to God. So I go, yep. I'll go through the steps as quickly as I can. I'll do everything my sponsor says, and I'll work for you, God. I'll sponsor as many people as I can. I took one sponsee on, and I had a miracle. One area of my life got better. I took a second sponsee on another area. It was like clockwork. Every time I took a new sponsee on, some huge area of my life got better. It was like a miracle. God said, "Well done. Here's another amazing miracle in your life." And I was on seven sponsees in OA. And another person asked me to sponsor them, and I said yes. That was my eighth sponsee. And I said yes. And I'd always got another miracle after I took on another sponsee. And 2 days later, I got a phone call in the middle of the night. It was from the Royal Free Hospital. And they said to me, "Sabir, we've got a kidney transplant waiting for you in the hospital. Someone's donated. Come in." And my mother drove me to the hospital. And I got that kidney transplant. I've had it now, I don't know, for well over a decade. And I've not been on a diet. It's like, working for God, just doing God's work. My health is back. I'm not on a machine to keep me alive. I have joy in my heart. I'm, it's like, I did biochemistry. I did an MBA. No, the most important thing is to understand God's principles. It's to recognize that, this is what I need to study. It's like the laws of God for me. It's like the more I give, the more I shall receive. And in addiction, it was like I'm a taker. When I'm not filled with God's love in a day, I just want, give me food, give me validation, give me money. How can I control everything? Because I feel out of control. But when I'm working, being God-centered rather than being self-centered, for me, that's the key. And it's like, if I want a happier life, I need to be more in alignment with these principles, which I can learn in OA. So it's like, yes, I love, I mean, I know that the more that I do God's work, the more that I give, the miracles, the synchronicities. And it's another thing I wanted to share on, like miracles. There's like, it's almost like you could have a science of miracles. It's like, doing service, your health comes back, your finances come back, manageability. It's like this thing of I'm powerless because I haven't got a connection to God's power. My life becomes unmanageable. So what's the opposite of that? If I have a fantastic connection to God's power on any day, then life's going to be, it's like God's going to take care of every aspect of my life, my health, my finances, my well-being. It's living a God-centered life. And for me, that God takes care of everything. There's a line in the OA invitation to you: the greater my surrender to a higher power, the greater is my freedom from food obsession. But I would say the greater my surrender to God in all areas of my life, the greater my freedom in finances, in health, in whatever area that I surrender to God, it comes under God's, under God's grace, under God's miracles. And
Yeah, that's 20 minutes.
that's 20 minutes. So I'll say, so thank you everyone for letting me share and for the privilege, and please do keep coming back. Thank you everyone.